Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. The legal battle surrounding Florida's election law continues. A U.S. district judge is considering provisions that would reduce early voting days and put new restrictions on registration drives and voters who change addresses at the polls. This leaves Florida's election supervisors with a lot of uncertainty about what to tell voters to expect when they head to the polls. On top of that, there's another legal battle over purging ineligible voters from the state's voter rolls. To discuss these issues, we've assembled a panel of people playing a key role in the state's elections process. You'll hear from Republican Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala, Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho, and Marilyn Wills, Vice President of the Florida League of Women Voters. Let's go around and find out just brief about yourself and what role you play in this process. Let's start with you, Mr. Ion Sancho.
I am Ion Sancho, Leon County Supervisor of Elections. I've served in that capacity now approaching some 24 years. And the issue from my point of view has to stem back to the efforts by the Florida legislature last year in crafting House Bill 1355 and its substantial changes to how Florida had been conducting its elections for the past half a dozen years. And that to me is the issue, 1355, and three provisions of 1355 which have not been pre-cleared by the United States Justice Department, which impact on early voting, a reduction which has been proposed by the legislature, and also two other areas which are in controversy, third-party voter registration activities, which the League could probably better address than I. And the issue relative to forcing individuals who have made address changes or not made address changes to vote by provisional ballot if they have not done so when they come in to vote.
Many of the changes that came down from the legislature, Representative Dennis Baxley, you played a key role in crafting the elections bill. Why did you feel it was needed?
Well, thank you. I appreciate being on this call with you and to have some time to discuss this with the other participants, and I thank them for what they do to contribute to the election process. We don't want to have any questions about credibility of results, and we want to make sure that we have a fair and open process. Between major election cycles, it's not unusual for the legislature to review the election process and see ways that it can be improved, that it can be safeguarded. And we have quite a discussion about how that happens. And they pass legislation that goes through many changes in this process. And then we present it to the governor, and he signs off on that or doesn't. In this case, he did. And I think many of the things that we did improved it. I think there's always going to be some areas of discussion and to what their effect is. And I'm more than happy to answer some of the reasons that those decisions were made.
All right. And also here in the studio, we have Ms. Marilyn Wills. You are the Vice President of the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the program. Now, parts of the elections bill are still pending at the federal level, as Mr. Sancho pointed out, because Florida is one of a handful of states that has to get federal approval for changes under the 1965 Voting Rights Act. There was recently a ruling that addressed one particular part of the law, limits on voter registration drives. Explain what happened there and about your organization overall.
Well, the League of Women Voters has been registering voters in Florida for the past 72 years with no problems. We are committed to registering as many voters as we can and to make sure that they are informed and that they go to the polls. We did go to court over some of the provisions of this legislation. And the judge, to quote the judge, on the 48-hour turning in your registrations within 48 hours, the judge said if the goal is to discourage voter registration drives and make it harder for new voters to register, then the 48-hour deadline may succeed. But then he also went on to say if it is to further the state's interests without unduly burdening rights of voters and voter registration organizations, then it's a bad choice. And went on to say that it is a poorly crafted set of rules.
Representative Baxley, why was this included in the law in the first place?
Well, clearly there is a responsibility and accountability of possessing personal data that is on people's voter registration forms. And also, we do have voters who go to the polls and claim that they've registered somewhere, and somehow or another their registration hasn't occurred. And yet they know that they completed forms and gave them to someone. So due to some of the abuses and some of the things that we saw, we felt like accountability is in order. And we felt that one of the things that would strengthen accuracy and of this data being turned in is to make it done more promptly. On the counterpoint, I would simply ask, why do you need to hold a person's voter information for 10 days? But in fact, this is a moot question because the courts ruled. I accept the fact that this is a total process. We pass legislation. The judicial process is where people can file suits if they object to things in the law. And the judiciary does their part. By and large, this bill passed scrutiny of the courts intact. There have been two or three points of discussion. I accept that that's part of the process. There's plenty of things in the bill that are probably not things that I would put in there, but it's a product of a conversation of 160 legislators and a governor.
All right, let's get in on that.
Our organization has been recalcitrant to changing their procedures to fit the rules, and they've objected and won a point in court, and we accept that.
All right, let's touch on that. One of the reasons frequently cited for the rule changes has been to reduce voter fraud. Is there a statistical basis for that argument out there? I'll try and get a response from you, Representative Baxley, but Mr. Ian Sancho, what do you say to this?
Let me say at the outset, this bill was crafted without seeking input from the state's local election supervisors.
That's not true at all.
This bill was presented. I was at a legislative meeting with Kurt Browning. I was with the legislative committee meeting when this bill was, in fact, inserted behind the strike all amendment. The supervisor of elections did not craft this bill, this language, relative to these areas. It was presented as this is what we want to do, and our association fought tooth and nail to try to alter some of these most onerous provisions. But this process really occurred separate from input from the supervisor of elections in its genesis. Quite frankly, it does mirror earlier Republican Party efforts, House Bill 957 in 2009. So there is a consistent effort here after the 2000 election to change the way elections are conducted. There is almost no incidence of fraud in the state of Florida. And to say that the 250-odd groups in some way kept the process going is simply to not understand the data which is out there.
Representative Baxley,
First of all, supervisor of elections are not there to write legislation. If you'd like to write legislation, run for the legislature. They write the legislation, and you get to participate in that process with them.
Representative
no involvement
Baxley.
By supervisors is absolutely false. They were always involved in that conversation, and you testified in committee personally. So I could take the position that that was never a consultation. Is incorrect.
So point of clarity, at the point of their participation is through the committee process of coming forward in the public hearing. That's where you're contending that there was participation.
Fact, this gentleman had testified against the bill. I never saw him until he appeared before committee. I filed this bill weeks before. It was early in the process. They knew there was a bill in progress. He never called on me. He came to the first meeting and testified against the bill.
One of the other things in the news that we're seeing, that we're talking about, the 180,000 Florida voters who may be on the state's voter rolls illegally. What's your take on this situation, Representative Baxley?
Well, you know, the people that are questioning this, I don't know how they can defend protecting the rights of dead people and ineligible illegal voters participating. That's part of the function of supervisors and the Secretary of State is to be sure that that's not happening. And I don't know how you defend that. that's the posture that they would take. I think what he's doing is appropriate and that we should protect this process and the integrity. We're disenfranchising every legitimate participant when we allow those things to go on. And they expect us to take care of this process and to be sure that only eligible voters are voting. And that seems very appropriate to me. So I know there are different viewpoints on that subject. Oh, but I don't know how you can defend not protecting the voter roll.
Marilyn Wills.
All right. We really do need up-to-date lists, and certainly the league supports that. We don't want people on the list who aren't eligible to vote. And I know that our independently elected supervisors are doing this on a daily basis, keeping up these lists. And any effort that you have that you're putting into effect to keep these databases up to date should be handled in a transparent process. The accuracy of the information that you're using is very important so that you're not taking people off who should be left on the database. And certainly it should be legal. And I think the law states that you cannot do this within 90 days of an election. And after the 2000 fiasco, where many people were thrown off because their name sounded like some felon's name, and we made national news, which we will never get over, I would think that they would be a lot more careful.
After speaking with Secretary of State Ken Detzner, he said that how during this 90-day period, you can still remove certain people off the rolls. And his argument to the Department of Justice is, why can't these non-citizens be on those protected class? So, Ion Sanger, jump in on
that. Well, yes, what you're referring to is Section 8 of the NVRA Act. Mm-hmm. Section 8 does provide four exclusions. The exclusions are, if you're convicted of a felony, you may be removed from the rolls. If you're dead, you may be removed from the rolls. If you lose your right to your mental capacity through a court hearing, you may be removed for rolls, off the rolls. And erroneous information pertinent to a voter's record may always be corrected. Those are the four specific statutory exemptions to the quiet period. Non-immigrant purges are not one of the specific statutory exceptions. Therefore, it's barred under the law.
So, Representative Baxley, the federal government and Florida are now suing each other over this issue. Florida wants access to the federal database, the SAVE database. How long have we been asking for access for this?
This aspect is really a discussion that's going on between the federal level and the governor's office, the Secretary of State's office, and I appreciate Mr. Sanchez's knowledge of the application and being part of that discussion. This is really an issue for them to work out. I don't think it's a legislative issue. The underlying issue of should we make sure that we are preserving the integrity of the voter roll, I think, is a worthy one. And I also appreciate the work of the Women's Voter League and others who encourage participation. That's an important role. I don't want anybody to fail to vote that's entitled to vote. And I think we agree on that.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Republican Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala, Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho, and Marilyn Wills, Vice President of the Florida League of Women Voters.
Ion Sancho, why have the Supervisors of Elections stopped or decided not to go forward with this purge?
I think the simple reason is that it's illegal under federal law. That if this purge had been given to us last year, we could have undergone some of the research necessary to work on this. However, the Supervisor of Elections, and I was around in 2000, fully are aware when poor databases are used that, quite frankly, legal voters are disenfranchised. The Secretary of State, in a consent decree issued after the 2000 election, admitted to at least 12,000 illegal Floridians who were eligible to vote on November 7th. They were barred based on these false or inaccurate data. The state essentially is telling us the data is not accurate. It's based on old data. This is what we've seen. And quite frankly, once we hit May 16th, which is 90 days before the August 14th primary, it became illegal under the federal law to do this. And in this case, this is not an area where the 10th Amendment prevails, that is state authority, because Congress does have under Article 1 of its power in the Constitution, they are the sole determinators of the time, place, and manner of federal elections. This says no purge may be done in this systematic matter unless it's complete within 90 days of a federal election and under the Supremacy Clause.
Secretary Ken Detzner is saying that it's the state's obligation to make sure these voter rolls are accurate and up to date. Non-citizens shouldn't be on there, and that should be their obligation, including from you. So what do you say to that in ensuring that?
I will follow federal law. I swore an oath to follow the United States Constitution. I'm aware of Section 8. Section 8 is very clear. I will follow Section 8.
I would like to add that I do appreciate the supervisors administering this review in a way, however they view these legal matters, to be sure that every person who is on such a list and is in view of consideration for contact to see if they are indeed eligible or not, have been given an opportunity to have provided individuals an opportunity to disprove any questioning of their eligibility. And I think that's been a very cautious procedure and appropriate one, and I thank the supervisors for administering it in that way.
To that point, we talked to one lady who's been voting for about 40 years. Both parents are U.S. citizens, born in Pennsylvania and New York, yet somehow she was on the list, Eileen Silas. And how does something like that happen, Mr. Sancho?
Bad list. It's not 90% accurate, and that's what the supervisors, following all of the database problems that we had in 2000, we need a database that's 90% accurate, and that actually has been accomplished with the state of Florida's felon database. It is that accurate. But this effort, which was apparently started last year, really needs much more work to get to that 90% ratio, because otherwise what we're doing is we're putting the burden on legal citizens to prove they're not guilty. And that kind of burden shifting, quite frankly, is not proper.
I think proving that you are eligible to vote is an appropriate question. I think the emphasis should be that the end result is this person's eligibility was confirmed and they were able to continue to participate. So I feel strongly that we do need those safeguards, that everyone has an opportunity to demonstrate their eligibility. And I don't think there's a problem with asking people to do that if there's some reason to question it. I do agree that if you have bad data, then you have to review your process.
Ms. Will, separate from the state and federal lawsuits, there's another one by the ACLU and other voting groups that I guess the league is not a part of. But can you explain to our listeners what it's about?
Well, I think that those groups are using the same basis for their suit that Supervisor Sancho mentioned, that you aren't supposed to do this within 90 days of an election that happens to be federal law.
So right now, what are the safeguards in place to make sure only Florida U.S. citizens can vote? And why aren't we seeking to put those changes?
The same safeguards that we had in 2006, 2008, and 2010, in which we have not right now one prosecutable case of an illegal citizen voting in those elections at this point.
What is so wrong about asking for an ID?
There's nothing wrong. Florida has asked for ID since 2002. I'm perfectly satisfied with the ID provisions. No law relative to ID was touched in 1355. And in fact, the same identification procedures used in 2006, 2008, 2010 will be used in 2012. That is a discussion pertinent to other states, not Florida.
Mm-hmm. Representative Baxley, we've heard a lot from those opposed to this effort, but there's also a constituency that supports the purge. And on its face, it's a pretty basic question. You're either eligible to vote or you are not. Why has this ballooned into such a big issue?
Well, because elections are always sensitive. You know, they're highly consequential in terms of our lives. And because the right to vote and the responsibility to vote is such an enormous thing, that anything that relates to this process is going to be highly sensitive and going to have different opinions about how to approach it. But clearly, the end goal, I think we all share, and that is that we want a credible election, that the results can not be questioned, that we can have great confidence in.
What's still needing to be clarified with House Bill 1355? What's hanging out there?
Early voting. We have 11.4 million registered voters. We expect somewhere 8+ to turn out on November the 6th. And as Kurt Browning said, we simply don't have the precincts on Election Day to handle 8.2 million voters. He stated that before the Senate in 2009, and that is true today. We have fewer polling places in the state of Florida today in 2012 than we had in 2000. And quite frankly, without early voting accessible, then the process will not work very well at all.
Representative Baxley, address early voting. What change did you guys put forward, and why do you think it will work with the changes you put in place?
Right. First of all, this was not in the House bill. This is part of a legislative process. The Senate felt it important to address early voting. I will tell you that I did get input from both sides of the aisle in areas where it's predominant that people come out and expect the candidates and their volunteers to be at the polls when they come vote, that the lengthy period of early voting was cumbersome for them to cover. And some of them did wish that we had a more compacted full-day schedule so that that was not as big a burden for them, that the first week of early voting is not very intense. It can be pretty scattered. And then the later days, it intensifies, of course, as you get closer to election. So as this legislation came over from the Senate, we found it acceptable because, number one, it did not diminish early voting by 1 hour. So we have not diminished the early voting access by 1 hour. It gives you the same opportunity.
What about the Sunday before Election Day?
Fewer number of days, which allows, you know, full-day schedules. That was another problem that I heard from individuals, that we would go and that location wasn't open all day. It was open partial hours during the early voting days.
Could you address the Sunday, the change, the Sunday before Election Day, when a lot of minorities are usually heading out to cast their ballot?
That one actually sort of surprised me as being a big issue because to me it's just a matter of scheduling which Sunday you want to go. You can pick the earlier Sunday and go right ahead and have a special day to do that. My thinking in that was that there should be some transition period, and 24 hours seemed like a very short period to convert from your early voting format to your general election schedule. I think we can still have souls to the poll day. Just what day you're going to have it may be different.
Souls to the poll day. Marilyn Wills.
One of the things that you Representative Baxley didn't mention is that there's a lot of flexibility in the hours when those polls can be open during early voting. Now, before this, it was 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and that gives people an opportunity to vote after they're done working. But if a supervisor decided to have their polls open from 8 till 2 or 3, that person would probably not be able to vote.
So what is the change that people will see when they go to the polls regarding early voting? Like, what can they do?
Well, this is one of the three areas under preclearance litigation. And I can't tell the voters whether the early voting will open 8 days or 15 days ahead of the election, because that'll be determined now by the courts. And so we're basically waiting to see what will occur. In 2008, in that presidential election, an absolute majority of African-American voters voted early. That 15-day period accommodated 52% of all the African-American votes cast in that election. And for the legislature, but when one of the largest minority groups in your state, and they chose to vote in this particular manner, and this particular manner had the days considerably shortened, it's a symbol of how the process did not really do, in my opinion, the kind of research necessary to see what these impacts would be.
Representative Baxley, we see the claim about voter suppression, that the bill was just to suppress voters.
Well, I always feel like the discussion is really denigrated when you move from discussing the merits of content of how you're going to do something to start projecting conspiracy theories and projecting evil motives onto other people. When you can have a legitimate discussion about the content, we didn't touch this in the House because we knew it would be sensitive. The Senate was ready to deal with it, and we have to work with the Senate to get to an end point. And the only reason I had no problem dealing with it and could defend it is they did not reduce early voting by 1 hour. And so as long as you have the same number of hours of opportunity, you know, how it's compressed and how it's arranged to be more practical, becomes a discussion between different opinions.
As we wrap up here, just final thoughts, Ion Sancho, on where we are now and what we should expect going up. I guess from what you said earlier, there's not a lot you can assure folks out there as to what to expect, since we're expecting some changes.
Well,
we
can tell the people that, in fact, the same ID provisions that we were acceptable in the last election are acceptable now. In terms of districts, they've been changed possibly dramatically through redistricts. So it's important that citizens open those voter information cards that they're receiving around the state. In terms of early voting, we don't know what's going to happen with early voting or the increase in provisional ballots. We're going to have to essentially stay tuned because at this point the litigation is going to provide the answers.
Marilyn Wills. Final thoughts.
The League is very happy that the court issued their ruling declaring parts of this law unconstitutional, and now we're going to get ready to register voters. We're 81,000 voters behind in Florida from where we usually are at this point in registrations. So we want everyone to register to vote, and if you're not sure about things, you can call your local League office or go to BeReadyToVote.org and get all the information you need.
All right. State Representative Dennis Baxley, Leon County Supervisor of Election, Ion Sancho, and League of Women Voters Vice President Marilyn Wills. Thank you all for joining me here on It's About Florida.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Special thanks to our guests, State Representative Dennis Baxley, Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho, and Marilyn Wills with the League of Women Voters. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our producer is Lynn Hatter, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.